Hello, I'm Ayanna Scantlebury. This is number 0505, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0505. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, singer David Osman of that large, talented family, the Osmonds, talks about his gig hosting the Daytime Emmy Creative Arts Awards.
This event for the 46th Annual Emmy Awards is such a cool opportunity to be able to, you know, showcase with the creative arts the unsung heroes. You know, this is where a lot of the other wonderful shows get recognized. It's a long night of a lot of awards, but I'm excited to be able to host that and celebrate the night with so many great talent and friends.
Jill Cody, co-author of Climate Abandoned, on the battle against climate change and the fight to save not the planet, but humankind.
It's not the Earth that needs saving, it's us. The Earth is going to be just fine. And, you know, actually the terminology is changing a bit from climate change. It was global warming and it went to climate change. The situation has got so much more serious that the phrases we hear now are climate crisis or climate disruption. The change has happened. We're seeing the change now, and it's becoming more of a crisis as the years tick away, and many things are being disrupted as well.
Lifestyle expert Suzanne Wexler on changing wedding traditions.
I think they got really too stiff for today's culture, which has podcasts and design your own playlists, like on-demand TV. So yeah, so this kind of stuffy before the box wedding with a complete checklist that you do and a lot of traditions. I think that it makes total sense that people aren't so into that anymore. But that said, they're a little quirky.
And of course, there's lots and lots of Stuff File news and an idiot of the day coming up later on the program. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0505, was my sweet niece, Ayanna Scantlebury. Thank you very much, Ayanna, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. Love you. A show that is listener-supported, fan-funded radio that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Okay, I've often said on this program that everything happens at Walmart. This latest story certainly stretches that axiom to its limits. At around 8:30 p.m. on April 10th, things got interesting at an Eau Claire, Wisconsin Walmart store. 46-year-old Lisa Smith entered the store with her unleashed dog, Bo, and as Bo distracted shoppers and store staff, Smith pulled apart store displays, putting them in her cart. After being asked by workers to leave the store, Smith went out into the parking lot and started practicing karate moves. Bo grabbed a box of Jiffy cornbread muffin mix and also attempted to leave the store. Meanwhile, Smith's son, 25-year-old Benny Van, had made his way to the back of the store where he completely undressed, exposed himself to other shoppers, and grabbed new clothes from store racks before attempting to run over police officers with his scooter. Smith was charged with disorderly conduct, resisting arrest, and misdemeanor bail jumping. Van racked up charges of lewd and lascivious behavior, disorderly conduct, and retail theft. Bo, police said, received only a warning for his theft of the muffin mix. Yes, just another day at Sam's Place. These are just some of the reasons I tend to stay out of Walmart. These are just some of the comments that negates us from getting Walmart advertising for this show. Oh, we're not done with Walmart just yet. In Crossville, Tennessee, police officers pulled over 45-year-old Sally Shelby at 5 a.m. on April the 5th after she motored down Highway 127 in the slow lane, driving a Walmart mobility scooter. She was on her way to the Waffle House, she said, to buy a cup of coffee. Shelby initially told officers she had built the scooter, but Walmart confirmed it was one of theirs and had surveillance video of Shelby driving the scooter out of the store to back up their story. She was arrested for theft. You know, I'm beginning to think that these might be the commercials for Walmart. Perhaps I should start charging them for these stories. I can just see their new slogan now. Walmart. Come for the great prices. Stay for the sideshow. Oh, wait. There's one more. A Texas woman was locked inside a Walmart garden center for nearly an hour after the section of the store closed. Sarah Luke said she stopped at the Walmart in Galveston for some laryngitis medication, and while inside, she decided to browse the garden center. I thought an employee saw me, but I was also wearing a green sweatshirt, Luke said. Maybe I blended in with all the plants, or he or she didn't really know and locked me in. Luke said she tried banging on the door, but she wasn't able to call out for help because, you know, her laryngitis. Luke contacted her mother to call the front desk at the store while she called the Galveston Police Department. 15 minutes after the police arrived, the assistant manager came and unlocked the door, Luke said. The assistant manager assured me that it wasn't her who locked me in, and the police officer started talking to her about how they need a more thorough walkthrough before locking the doors, Luke said. She said Walmart gave her a gift card and a free plant as compensation. Okay, how much of a gift card and what kind of plant? Compensation value matters in stories like this, you know. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. When the Wilkinson School in El Granada, California, received a bomb threat on the morning of April 11th, it didn't take long for administrators to empty the building of staff and students. But law enforcers searching the grounds found nothing, because the threatening phone call actually came from 2,100 miles away in Woodville, Mississippi. That's where a 15-year-old student intended to threaten her own Wilkinson County High School, but apparently didn't check her Google search thoroughly enough before dialing. Yes, this is a story that proves clearly why some people really, really, really need to stay in school. She also needs to double down on geography and also learning the fact that different locations have different area codes. Yeesh. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? The 46th Annual Daytime Emmy Awards takes place on Sunday, May 5th from Pasadena, California. But 2 days before that, the Daytime Emmy Creative Arts Awards ceremony will take place on Friday, February 3rd. That portion of the festivities will be hosted by David Osman. As the name suggests, he comes from a long line of talented entertainers. His father is Alan, the oldest of the famed Osmond brothers. His uncle and aunt are Donnie and Marie. And David has had an amazing musical career on Broadway, touring to sold-out arenas across the globe, and charting several top 40 hits in the UK. He's also the host of the syndicated show Wonderama. David joins us on the line right now from Las Vegas. Hi, David.
How you doing, man? Hey, thanks. You did that perfectly. Nice introduction. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm just surprised you have the time to be on with us. I mean, you've got so many things going.
It's insane. And I'm not going to lie to you. Right now, in this moment, I give props and credit to my wife, my beautiful wife of 12 years. We're in Las Vegas right now. We're celebrating our anniversary this week. So I carved out enough time with permission with my wife to come sit down with you, Peter, and be able to chat about this stuff coming up, because we're all excited and appreciate that. So kudos and props to my wife.
Thank you very much, and thank your wife for allowing you to be here on the program with us. Now, as I mentioned, the lineage here is just amazing. Your father was the oldest of the Osmond brothers, is the oldest of the Osmond brothers, and you are one of, what, 8 boys?
Can you believe that, man? Now, first of all, do you remember the Osmond brothers? Do you remember like the history of them? And you're not that old, are you?
Yes, I am. I grew up watching the Andy Williams show, so I grew up. I'm about the same age as your Uncle Donnie. So,
oh really?
I grew up watching the Osmonds.
It was unbelievable. what they were able to accomplish and still accomplishing. Yeah, speaking of being here in Vegas, they are, Donnie and Marie, celebrating 11 years at the Flamingo, and they're wrapping it up this year. And it's been an amazing thing to watch them my whole life because I grew up around those stages. I mean, I thought every kid's dad did this thing called showbiz. And so I've been fortunate enough to be performing since I was just a little kid and still doing that in many different capacities, from the TV shows like Wonderama to the Broadway stuff you mentioned. And then now still doing my own music with a big band. But coming down and being a part of this event for the 46th Annual Emmy Awards is such a cool opportunity to be able to, you know, showcase with the creative arts the unsung heroes. You know, this is where a lot of the other wonderful shows get recognized. It's a long night of a lot of awards, but I'm excited to be able to host that and celebrate the night with so many great talent and friends.
What's more nerve-wracking for you? Because I know last year you were actually a nominee for an Emmy. Is it more nerve-wracking?
That's right.
Is it more nerve-wracking to host or to sit there and wait to see if your name is called?
No, hosting is like the dream, man, because not just singing, being able to get there, have the mic. That's you know, that's the wheelhouse. That's the fun part. And to be able to open up the show with some music and also just to be able to present, that's what I'm doing with Wonderama. So that's more of the comfort as opposed to sitting there wondering, hey, okay, what am I going to say if this happens? So that was definitely more nerve-wracking last year.
Now, I've seen a few clips of your show Wonderama, and the thing that caught my eye was just the amount of fun you seem to be having.
Man, it's like a dream job. And I don't know if you know much of the history of the Wonderama brand, but it was a show that ran, boy, it started back even when the Emmys started. It was in the 50s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. It ran for almost 30 years, so one of the longest-running TV programs in history. And having brought it back several years ago, it was a thrill. And I didn't even know what Wonderama was. But it's a kid's show about kids, for kids, by kids. Total variety. And having grown up around the Osmond specials, Donnie and Marie shows, everything, variety was their middle name, you know? So we showcase kids' talents from singers and performers and dance groups, and then we do wild games. We have 100 kids in the audience every episode, and it's a very live feel. And I get to be kind of the fly on the wall, kind of the older brother type personality for these kids, and watch them just, you know, take the show and run. And I do. You're right. I have a blast. It is so much fun. Film it right in the heart of New York. We're syndicated across the country every single weekend, 52 weeks a year. And we're excited to announce that this May 4th, we're actually launching our cable play. We're going to be on Up TV starting May 4th.
Excellent. Now, getting back to the Daytime Creative Arts Awards, as you said, these are some of the unsung heroes. You know, you see all the glitz and the glamour of the award shows with the people who are in front of the camera, but you don't get to hear or see the craftspeople who are involved in bringing that all together.
Yeah, and what's really cool about this, especially this year, 46 years, I was talking to David Michaels, vice president of NANTS, the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences. He was telling me that they've broken all records for this year. The number of entries that were put in competing for that Emmy is outstanding. And also there's going to be a record number of attendance for the creative arts, which is really cool. But you're right, it's industry professionals voting for their peers, meaning that, you know, they're playing to their crowd, their own people, meaning directors are voting for directors, writers are voting for writers. So it's really, you know, it's a wonderful opportunity for people to showcase and be showcased for the talent and the work that they've done.
As I mentioned, last year you were a nominee yourself for an Emmy. How did you go from nominee to host? How did you get the gig?
You know, I had a chance to meet people like David Michaels and a lot of the crowd down there. Last year I was invited to come and present because I was nominated for the award. And then they had my aunt Marie. I invited her to come down and present an award with me. And as we were backstage hanging out, we just really hit it off with the crew, the cast, and everybody that produces the show. And they had reached out to me and said, hey, listen, we're looking for some other elements. We've had hosts in the past, and we wanted to bring a musical element. They've seen a lot of the show Wonderama, where I get to perform and sing some of my own music. And they said, we'd love and be honored to have you kick off the show. And, man, I was so thrilled. This is so cool. To not only be there at the Creative Arts to host that and help the night flow through. Because that's the one thing. It is, you know, it's a long night. There's a lot of awards. There's a lot to get through. So they want to be able to pace it as well as we can and keep it entertained. And it is a show, and it's a fantastic show. And then while I'm down there, they've asked if I could also be a part of the Sunday event with some music and presenting. And there's a lot of cool things for that night. Great friends involved, and it was nice to build those relationships, because, man, in the world of showbiz and television, it ends up being a really small world. I mean, everybody knows everybody. The degrees of separation are really close. And so being able to hit it off with a lot of the friends down there, I was so honored for the invitation to come down and host. I'm really looking forward to it.
As I mentioned, you're one of the eight sons of Alan Osmond. Eight boys, where are you in the pack?
I'm number four of eight boys, no sisters, which is funny because my dad comes from a family of nine kids, eight boys, and one girl. Marie was the only girl, so there is definitely something genetically going on here.
Well, I come from an opposite family. I'm the last of five, and I'm the only boy, so it's totally opposite in my family.
No way, man. That's so cool.
Yeah. So
I've got two young daughters and also a younger boy. So I've got, you know, we got the three kids. So my young son is kind of the role that you had. It's like you've got to be the younger brother, but also the protector of your sisters, right? Is that the role you played?
Well, I was actually way behind the pack. So they were more a protector of me. It was like having five moms.
For better or worse, right?
Always for better. Always for better. Now, the reason why I bring up the family is, you know, you're a very talented guy in your own right. But was there really a choice? I mean, is anybody not in the family business?
You know what? That's actually a really good question. And it may appear like, yeah, you know, this is what you're cut out for, and this is what you're going to do. I'll be honest. There's a lot of Osmonds. And I have a ton of cousins, and there's very few that are actually in show business, very few that sing and perform and continue it on. In fact, when we started as little kids, we didn't know it was a business. We didn't know what music industry was and television and performing. It was around us. But when my dad, he saw me and my three older brothers, we had a barbershop quartet when I was just, I started singing when I was 2 years old. I don't remember how we started. We just started harmonizing and singing the same songs my dad was doing with his brothers from back in the Andy Williams shows and on. And as my dad saw us singing and loving and kind of doing our own music stuff at home, you know, he was thinking in the back of his mind, uh-oh, you know, here we go again. But he made sure, he said, almost discouraging us, saying, listen, boys, if you want to do this, it's not a cakewalk. It's not easy. It's hard work. And if you're going to do it, you're going to do it right. And he trained us the same way that he was raised. Was, you know, we got up, we were rehearsing 3 to 4 hours a day with studios in our basement with mirrors, dancing, singing, working on our craft. And I was trained by the best. Their work ethic is second to none. And I stand on the shoulders of giants. So my dad really, he carved the path and helped us get started. But, you know, with our eyes wide open. For sure.
The thing that's so amazing about the Osmonds, both first generation and now second generation, is the fact that not only is there so much talent there, but well-adjusted.
well, thank you, man. I appreciate that. That's a very huge compliment.
I can't
imagine what life must have been like for a lot of the child actors, a lot of the child stars. I look at my family. They've been doing this since they were kids, and the world is a whole different place. How they grew up and what they've experienced. So having that, what you just said, having kind of the normal aspect, is a big deal because it's a very unique business and unique experience that can alter, and sometimes maybe arrest a development. And I really attribute the grounding to my grandparents. You know, it was always a foundation of principles, saying this is who we are, this is what we're about, and this is the order of things. And it's God and family, and that comes first for us, and then show business. And I think they've kept their principles grounded and tried to give them as much of a normal life as possible, despite the different aspects of show business. But I think that made a huge difference in their lives. And yeah, you're right. It's great to associate and work with my uncles and my aunts. In fact, Marie and I go on tour and perform quite a bit, and I still, to this day, am learning so much from them by their examples.
And yet you're the one who gets to host the Daytime Creative Arts Awards. So congratulations on that.
Man. Dude, I am thrilled. I'm so thrilled. Are you going to be there, by the way?
I won't have a chance to be there, but I look forward to watching it. It's taking place on Friday, May the 3rd. There are various ways that one can see it on web, at emmyonline.tv, also on Facebook. It's also available at knekt.tv. So there are various ways you can watch it.
It's called, Connect. It's K-N-E-K-T-TV. Connect.tv. Not easy for me to say. But I think one of the best ways you can even go watch it is on their Facebook page. Go to facebook.com/Daytime Emmy Awards. And you can watch it all there. Or emmyonline.tv. There's a lot of places, and we're all connected big time. So there's a lot of places to stream those award shows.
David, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
I'm excited to be with you. Thank you for helping us spread the word. And it's going to be a very exciting night. There's some surprises, by the way, in store. We're celebrating some really cool things there. It's the 50th anniversary of Sesame Street. There's some really cool elements coming on there. 40th anniversary for CBS Sunday Morning. It's the 25th anniversary for Extra. There are a lot of honorees, some prize guests. Judge Judy's getting honored for all her work in television. A lot of cool things happening this year.
That's the very busy David Osmond. He'll be hosting the Daytime Emmy Creative Arts Awards ceremony on Friday, March the 3rd. Go to emmyonline.tv to find out how you can see it. Also at facebook.com/TheEmmys. As for David, you can check out his website at davidosmond.com, and you'll find all of those links by going to our website at thestufffile.com. And you know, David has so much going on, such as an album coming out in the summer with the Osmond Chapman Orchestra, that we definitely have to have him back on the show when that album is closer to release. You're listening to The Stuff File Program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File Program is a listener-supported, fan-funded radio show that depends on you for our success. Join us at patreon.com to help make this show an even bigger and better radio experience. Sign up and find out about our rewards program. Being a patron doesn't have to be a long-term commitment. There's absolutely no obligation. You could join today and end whenever you'd like. But the time we have your support would be so greatly appreciated. We'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show and even your ideas for rewards. Join us for the ride. Join us at patreon.com/thestufffileprogram. You're experiencing The Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder. Sit back, relax, let it rattle around between your ears, tickling your cerebellum, and enjoy.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about climate change. Plus, we'll also talk about wedding traditions. There's an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and more Stuff File news here on The Stuff File Program, which is heard everywhere, including on Stitcher and TuneIn, and can also be heard via Google Play and iTunes. Just click on the Google Play or iTunes button located on the website at thestufffile.com. And whichever platform you listen to the program on, please feel free to leave a review of the show on their site. It would be greatly appreciated. Well, let's get back to the stuff. An unnamed 40-year-old man in Muncie, Indiana, is suing his parents for trashing his collection of porn videos and magazines, which he estimates is worth $29,000. According to the Associated Press, the man had been living with his parents for 10 months following a divorce, and after he bought a new house, his parents delivered his possessions minus the 12 boxes of porn. His parents admitted dumping the collection in an email quoted by the lawsuit. The father told his son, "I did you a big favor by getting rid of all that stuff." The son is seeking $87,000 in financial damages. Oh, I have so many questions about this story. First of all, he says his porn collection is worth $29,000. That's his estimate. But can it really be true? And if on the off chance that it is it really something to be bragging about? Second, he was recently divorced. Given his collection, does that surprise anyone? Third, he moved out of his parents' place and into his new house, but his folks took it upon themselves to throw out his personal items rather than deliver them with the rest of his stuff. At this point in life, was this really any of their business? Just seal it, ship it, and forget you ever saw it. It's out of your house, and so is your son. I'm sure this lawsuit will be a lot of fun, and it will also lead to massive amounts of therapy for everybody involved. Although, to be honest, the father claimed he destroyed the porn for the mental and emotional health of his son, pointing out that, as a boy, the son had gotten kicked out of high school for selling porn to other students. Again, lots of therapy. Yee. Okay, it's time now for some naked news stories. First up, in Cary, North Carolina, Wake County Deputy Jay Rattelade responded to a report of a car crash on the evening of April 5th and found one of the drivers, 36-year-old Durwood Johnson of Fort Worth, Texas, had gotten out of his car and removed all his clothes before starting to walk across the street. As Deputy Rattelade tried to arrest him, Johnson hit her on the head. With the help of other first responders and some pepper spray, Rattelade was able to subdue Johnson, who was charged with assault on a government official. Rattelade was unhurt. Johnson was taken to an area hospital for further evaluation. I'm assuming his clothes were taken with him as well. And while we're still talking about birthday suits, on April 13th, a family in Newtown, Connecticut, returned home from a morning shopping trip to find 35-year-old Joseph Achenbach wandering around inside their home, naked. Joseph had crashed his SUV in the homeowner's backyard and moseyed on inside through an unlocked glass door. His clothes were not found at the scene, leading police to believe he had been naked when he crashed. He was charged with second-degree criminal trespassing and driving while intoxicated. Apparently, no charges were laid pertaining to all his parts flapping in the breeze. Guess they felt the evidence wouldn't stand up in court. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, 26-year-old Brandon Corey LaCroix of Greenwood, South Carolina, really wanted to get rid of his neighbor. In March of last year, the FBI was tipped off that LaCroix had contacted an unidentified white supremacist group and asked them to kill his African-American neighbor, hanging him from a tree and leaving a cross burning in his yard. An FBI agent posing as a hitman got in touch with LaCroix, who offered $500 for the killing and told the agent he was planning to take over the neighbor's property. As soon as LaCroix made a $100 down payment, he was taken into custody. On April 12th of this year, LaCroix pleaded guilty to a murder-for-hire charge and was sentenced to 10 years in prison and 3 years of supervision. Okay, should he survive prison, here's hoping that this 3 years of supervision upon release involves a black parole officer. Plus, when you think of the demographic makeup of the U.S. prison system these days, Brandon is going to have to deal with many more African-American neighbors than he ever anticipated. Oh, that should be fun when they find out why he's in. Also, who is really willing to kill someone for hire for just $500? That's what I want to know. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Monday, April 22nd, is Earth Day. The United Nations Secretary General called climate change a direct existential threat. But what does that mean, and what can we do about it? Jill Cody is the co-author of Climate Abandoned: We're on the Endangered Species List. She joins us on the line right now from Carmel, California. Hi, Jill.
Well, hi, Peter. How are you today?
Just tickety-boo. Thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Love it. Oh, it's my pleasure.
When we talk about climate change, and by the way, I love that terminology, climate change, as opposed to what we used to say, global warming.
Warming. Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I find interesting is when people talk about this as being a direct existential threat and how it affects us. Because the thing I've always said is we've been talking about this wrong for years in that we're worried about the Earth. The Earth is going to be fine. It is one planet amongst many. And in case anybody hasn't noticed, we can't live on the others. But they're still there. And that could be our problem.
Well, you are very insightful, because I would say the same thing years ago, that it's not the Earth that needs saving, it's us. The Earth is going to be just fine. And, you know, actually the terminology is changing a bit from climate change. It was global warming and then went to climate change. The situation has got so much more serious that the phrases we hear now are climate crisis or climate disruption. The change has happened. We're seeing the change now. And it's becoming more of a crisis as the years tick away, and many things are being disrupted as well. So when we talk about it being an existential threat, you know, the panel, IPCC panel, was talking about us having maybe 12 years before really catastrophic climate change starts to occur. Now, when we're talking about 12 years, that's going, you know, to 1.5 centigrade warmth around the planet. But we're already on path, if we don't change things quickly, to go to 3 degrees Celsius worldwide. And the last time there was 4 degrees in the Arctic Circle, there were palm trees. So people don't think about it being very serious when you hear 1 degree or 1.5 degrees or 3 degrees. But we're not talking about an average weather day. We're talking about the heat around the entire planet, the entire biosphere. And they're not the same. They're not apples and apples. So when we're talking about 3 degrees, it's not going from 97 degrees outside to 100. It's in the biosphere and affects everything. So that's why it's much more serious.
And to be honest, when people talk about, no matter if they have children or grandchildren or great-grandchildren, when people talk about saving the planet for future generations, a lot of people don't really pay attention to that because they think about, well, quite frankly, themselves. And that it's a problem somebody else will have to take care of in the future when we're long gone. And that's the future is quickly arriving.
Well, it is here. What happened is it seems fractured. People that are looking at the issue globally, literally, we can connect the dots. For example, the war in Syria was really the first climate change war, because it was the farmers who could not, they had a climate change exacerbated drought in the farmland areas of Syria. They could not survive, and they moved into the city. And then that created pressures in the city and demands on Assad, and before you know it, we had the Syrian war, and it was just disastrous. But it really was because people could not live or farm land anymore because it had gone dry. We do have a problem also in America, I think. I don't know about Canada, but I do know in America that most of us are really have that quick fix mentality. You know, we just need to invent something. We'll just invent something. Somebody will invent something someday soon. I don't have to worry about it. The quick fix that there's one thing that's going to save us, and there's no silver bullet. This is not Hollywood. This is not a movie. There's not a silver bullet, and there are many things that we need to do. And we also need to, instead of thinking, one of my phrases I use, and one of the authors in the book, by the way, the book is an anthology. We were all trained by Al Gore. And one of the individuals lives in, I think she's in Hungary, and she wrote the European viewpoint on climate change. And I made the suggestion that, you know, Americans are real navel gazers. We just sort of look at ourselves and, you know, not really look up and around at the rest of the world.
And she said to me, oh, Europeans, we don't talk like that. So we took that out of my comments of the book. But really, we, you know, if you are just looking at your life, then you may not, you won't be getting, it's a fact, you won't be getting the complete picture. One of my authors, another author that wrote the chapter on ICE and religion, Dr. Peter Hess, he has lost in California, not one, not two, but three homes to climate change exacerbated California wildfires. I mean, the poor guy has PTSD. So, you know, we're, people are experiencing it everywhere. And it's just looking up and around and paying attention.
Well, so how do we, because I look at it from three ways. There are things that we should keep doing. There are things that mm-hmm. we should stop doing and things that we should mm-hmm. start doing. But having brought that up, let's talk about a simple thing like recycling. It's one thing mm-hmm. for me to say I'm going to divide all my garbage and separate it so that when the various trucks that come to pick up various things, it goes where it's supposed to go. But how do I really know that's happening once I put stuff on the curb?
Well, a couple of thoughts there. One is recycling really doesn't have much to do with climate change. It's an environmental issue, and they can be two, and they can cross over. And there's a certain way that you have faith and trust in your cities and your government that it's doing the right thing when they're asking you to do this kind of work like recycling. What's happening with climate change and the climate crisis is that we can lower our carbon footprint as much as we can by solarizing our house and having LED lights and that sort of thing. However, we're kind of past that. I hate to be the bearer of bad news because I don't want people to stop doing that. It is very important, mainly too for your energy bill. But we're really kind of past what an individual can do in that level. And as you said on the Keep, Stop, Start, each one of these chapters in the book has, depending on the topic, what people can keep doing, stop doing, and start doing. And one thing to keep in mind, is that your vote counts. You vote for those who genuinely committed to address the myriad issues of climate change and the climate crisis. We have to stop electing people, at least here in our Senate, where one senator threw a snowball on the Senate floor.
I remember
saying,
that.
Saying, where's the climate? Do you remember that?
Yeah, oh yeah.
I mean, that was just absurd, because where there's drought in one area of the planet, thinking planetarily, then there's extra water and snow and flooding in another area of the planet. So if Washington, D.C. has a tremendous amount of snow, maybe unusual in their minds from other years, then another part of the planet has a drought like Syria did that moves people to the city. So throwing a snowball is absurd, and we have to get rid of people like that. I don't know if you have, having gone to college at the University of Alberta for a little while, I feel that Canadians are much more focused on environmental issues and critical thinking skills, but we really do in this country have to vote people like that out, because they are really literally at the point starting to kill us, you know, starting to kill our future.
The reason why I brought up the recycling thing is because I was talking about more what's happening if we do our part to use a more climate change reasoning of the carbon tax.
Yes.
Many places are thinking about carbon tax. Some people are fine with the idea of a carbon tax, but still are concerned, is it doing what it's supposed to do? Is money going where it's supposed to go? Is it really having a result?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's working in California. California put in a carbon tax, and it is working. And it can, if the federal government here would entertain the same kind of thing, that we are a best practices model in California. The thing is that there are always going to be people that don't like it, especially those that are funded by and make their profit through the fossil fuel industry. So that's when, you know, a solid governmental policy is important, because you just have to have the strength of will as a elected professional to make the right decisions versus, you know, the ones that affect the, you know, those that make the money on a on an industry that's really failing and is failing. I mean, coal in this country is really a failing industry. And we need to really look at how we can help those states and those employees in that industry. It's like setting type was back when the printing press was invented. You know, people lost their jobs, and we need to find a way to help them and make better plans there.
But unfortunately,
you have to kind of trust your government eventually. You can always, at least through elected officials, find out if things are working or not working.
When you talk about coal, of course, unfortunately, there's always somebody out there who still laments the day that we don't make buggy whips anymore.
But
having said that, I've got less.
I've got
less than a minute, and I just want to get this point out, because you alluded to it, and I think it's very important to talk about as far as your book is concerned. This is a book, Climate Abandoned. We're on the endangered species list. That is, you are the co-author of, along with other authors around the world. So they're sharing their viewpoints of how it's affecting their part of the world and how it's affecting us all globally. Correct?
Yes, and their personal experiences. They're sharing their stories. And the book is launching on Earth Day through Amazon. So this Monday, the book will be launched, and I was the editor and contributor.
Excellent. Jill, I thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you, Peter. My pleasure.
Jill Cody, co-author of Climate Abandoned, We're on the Endangered Species List. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com to the page for the show, which is show number 0505, and you'll find links to Jill's website and also links to either amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order her book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. After we announce the finalists in our wacky warning label contest, we get calls from all over the world. They all ask the same thing. Why are there so many common sense warnings on products sold in America? The answer is that anyone who sells a product here knows that they can be sued over almost anything, so these warnings are meant to prevent frivolous lawsuits. Like when a guy who was playing basketball caught his teeth in the net while dunking the ball and sued the net makers. He got $50,000. In another case, a tool maker was sued by a man who used one of their wood routers to try to fix his own teeth. The company eventually put a label on the tool warning that it's not intended to be used as a dental drill. Now let's be fair, these warnings can be hilarious, but the fact that product makers have to put them there because they're facing so many abusive lawsuits is nothing to laugh about. You can see many of these actual warnings and enter our annual contest on our website. Visit us at centerforamericatv.org.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio that's finger-licking good, if you're into that sort of thing.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about wedding traditions. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, here on a program that is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. But I've got one more Stuff File news story I want to share with you right here, right now, before we get to our next guest. Okay. Every once in a while, I like to share some valuable tips to any would-be criminals out there who are plotting their next caper. Words of wisdom that can help them along on their path. So here's an important piece of advice. If you're planning to pretend to be a police officer so that you can pull people over in your car, try to avoid pulling over real police officers. Yeah, a Florida man found himself in some hot water for doing just that. The Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office arrested 26-year-old Matthew Joseph Aris after pulling over one of their undercover detectives. Aris had red and blue lights on the grill of his car. After discovering Aris was not a legitimate officer, deputies conducted a real traffic stop on him. They found an airsoft gun. Aris is now facing a charge for impersonating a law enforcement officer. You know, maybe he can continue to impersonate a police officer while he's in jail. You know how other inmates love it when they have someone they think is a cop in their midst. Yeah. I was seriously thinking of making him the idiot of the day, but I didn't do that. That comes later in the program. But right now, let's get to our next guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? Weddings are often carried out on traditions, but nowadays, some of those traditions are falling by the wayside, and some of them should. Brides and grooms are switching up traditions in novel ways. Culture and lifestyle expert Suzanne Wexler is here to share some of them. Suzanne is the author of Desperately Seeking Fabulous, which is coming out later this year. Her work is also seen in places like the Huffington Post and the National Post and more. She joins us on the line via Skype from right here in Montreal. Hi, Suzanne.
Hi.
Thanks for being on the program with us. So, as I said in the introduction, there are some traditions that could probably use an update, but then there are some new ideas that I'm thinking that make people scratch their heads. Where are you on some of the changes in traditions as far as weddings are concerned?
I think they got really too stiff for today's culture, which, you know, has podcasts and design your own playlists, like on-demand TV. So yeah, so this kind of stuffy before the box wedding with a complete checklist that you do and a lot of traditions, I think that it makes total sense that people aren't so into that anymore. But that said, that they're a little quirky, people tend to go a little crazy there. So yeah.
Do you think that the part of the problem is weddings, generally speaking, are literally a generation or two behind whatever any kind of trend is? And the reason why I say that is most of the time when I've seen people planning a wedding or trying to do a wedding, they're really appeasing their parents and their grandparents more than themselves.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, just remember, they used to be, right, arranged marriages and that dowry involved. So certainly better than those times. But yeah, with the parents at this point, I think it's a split bill depending on how old the couple is. So because of that sort of financial attachment, there's a lot of appeasing the parents. Although this latest generation, I think, is less into mom and dad's tradition than they would probably like.
Now, what about some of the traditions that we're very familiar with, which really are kind of old-fashioned? The bouquet toss, the garter toss. Are these on the way out, or are they being updated in any way, shape, or form?
Those ones, I would say, are more on the outs than all the others. Again, it's like the whole entire checklist. People are picking and choosing what they want. If any of those are really sticking around, it would be the first dance. A lot of couples still doing a first dance. But then the other ones, whether it's a father-daughter, mother-son dance, bouquet toss, garter toss. I think garter toss must be really low. Cake cutting, less and less people are feeling the need to do those things.
The bridesmaids' dresses. Or yes. as I remember them back in my day, when everyone seemed to be wearing some sort of iridescent color, salmon comes to mind. We used to refer to them as salmon sausage casings.
That's amazing.
The bridesmaids' dresses. Are these still around or still as popular?
Yeah, people, I think it's the age of the bride. I think because people are getting married a little bit older, around 33, the average now, which I read that on Wedding Wire recently. It still seems pretty old to me, but not that 33 is old. Heaven forbid. But it's old sort of, you know, in the traditional sense to get married. Perhaps getting all your friends wearing identical dresses when you're 33 is a bit gauche, perhaps. Maybe your friends wouldn't be so into it. It does seem like a younger bride kind of thing to do, personally. I mean, some people might be into it, so, you know, whatever floats your boat, but...
The thing that I've never understood is, I mean, and let's look at it from just a bridesmaid's point of view. These are probably, if you have the traditional number, maybe a maid of honor and two or three bridesmaids. So you're talking four of your best pals. They're putting out a lot of money for a dress they will never wear again.
Yeah, never, never. If, you know, unless they're a little out there. Yeah, they will not wear it again. And there's a lot of other expenses, right?
So yeah, and nor would they want to, because again, I've always maintained that it's sort of a yin and yang kind of thing when it comes to the bride. I want to look my best, and I want to look my most beautiful, and one of the ways I'm going to do that is making my three best friends look the worst they can.
Right. Well, initially the bridesmaids, first of all, initially the bridesmaids were the mom's friends, you know, and then when it became younger bridesmaids, the idea, it was some kind of superstition. They were supposed to wear white and they were supposed to stop some kind of spirits from catching the bride or something like that. Like they wouldn't, the spirit, you know, they'd duke out the spirit. They couldn't catch the actual bride. Anyhow, and then now it's a whole different ball game of super, super matching same fabric. But according to some sources, this really actually got most popular in the 90s and hasn't necessarily been around that long. Same fabric, same cut, same everything. So, yeah, now, no surprise that that one's going away.
I just looked up today some of the new trends. Bouncy castle or bouncy house is a trend that comes from the UK. Life-size wedding dress cakes. I'm not so sure about that. The idea of the bride and groom cutting into something that looks like what the bride is wearing sounds creepy on so many levels. And marching bands.
Wow. Yeah. Well, the trend in weddings is personalization. So everybody's bringing out their, you know, their particular quirks. Those are very bouncy castles, and it was an extreme quirk, and I don't even know how you would classify. Very, very, very goofy. I don't, very childlike. But yeah. So
do you think
people are getting married at breweries? People are.
Do you think part of the change is the fact that we are now living in a society where everybody has a camera or a video literally in their pocket.
Yes, this...
And as a result, weddings are becoming more elaborate and more individual because it adds to what people can put up on their Facebook and their Instagram and other places and social media. So it's got to be literally a show.
I totally think you bring up an excellent point. A lot of these are driven by social media likes, particularly probably the more bouncy castle like what you saw it on YouTube today. I mean, so it's getting out there. There is definitely a huge percentage, I think, who is going for this like social media attention and trying to outdo the other person or whatever it is. Yeah.
It's the beginning of the bridal season, normally when people think about summer weddings, and now there's just that much more for the bride to think about. And by the way, I still think it, when I say that, it sounds sexist, but the, you know, basically the family, what they want the groom to do is wear a tux and show up.
Well, nowadays, I think the grooms are really partaking more. Like, I think they're making the playlist. They're adding to the mood. I mean, the idea is that you get them as a couple. This isn't just the bride's interest. Like, the bride's not probably sending them to breweries and boxing rings, right? Like, she might. The bouncy castle doesn't really sound like a female idea. I don't know. Maybe it is. But, yeah, so I'd say the grooms are actually having more of an influence in the weddings and taking out a chunk that used to belong to parents, which they might be a little sad about. But
I mentioned in the introduction, you have a book coming out. It's called Desperately Seeking Fabulous. What's that about?
Desperately Seeking Fabulous. So it is about my struggle to be fabulous, live a fabulous life. But it's just the story of just how difficult it is to find your passion in life, find a significant other, find a job you like, one internship after another and after another. And always, you know, every era is tough and every era has its own, you know, difficulties. But this one with an extended adulthood is really what my journey is about. And then when I become an adult, you know, a series of bad things happen. But, I learned something along the way. But really, it's really geared at, you know, that person who's wonderful, feels they have it all together, educated, but might be living on their parents' couches for them.
And when is that coming out?
Hopefully the end of the year. I'm told to be patient, patient, patient. So
when it does come out, will you come back on the show and talk to us about it?
I would love to. Thank you. Until then, you could find updates on my website, which is SuzanneWexler.com.
Excellent. Suzanne, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you so much. I had such a great time.
And if you have a lot of friends out there, enjoy the wedding season.
Yes, enjoy.
Culture and lifestyle expert Suzanne Wexler. You can find out more information about Suzanne and her upcoming book by going to her website at SuzanneWexler.com. And you can go to my website at TheStuffFile.com, check out the show number for this program, which is show 0505, and you'll find links to Suzanne's site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. It's time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
A Polk County Sheriff's deputy arrested a Des Moines woman last week for bringing drugs into a jail. A bag of methamphetamine fell out of the pants 56-year-old Deborah Ann Sly was wearing when she turned herself into the Polk County Jail for outstanding warrants, earning her a new charge. Sly reported to the jail because a warrant had been issued for her arrest on March 27th. She'd failed to appear for a disposition bond hearing after violating a no-contact order. Sly apparently thought she'd do the right thing and turn herself in, but it ended up going horribly wrong, sheriff's deputies allege. Sly was charged with possession of a controlled substance, a serious misdemeanor, for the mishap. Okay, so why? Oh, why? If you're going to turn yourself into the police for a previous infraction, would you show up at the jail with drugs in your pocket? One reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of The Stuff File program number 0505. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0505. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check us out on patreon.com, where you can become a patron of the program. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've experienced another edition of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Now, doesn't that make you feel all warm and fuzzy? Like watching puppies and kittens frolicking in a field of daisies. Like the smells coming from Grandma's kitchen. Like the hallucinogenics you took in the 60s and I'm taking right now. Hello, cartoon birdies. Perhaps I've said too much. Anyway, you know what I mean. Let the glow wash over you and enjoy. Peace out.